The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Hawaii's Tomorrow. Coming up today, Jeff meets with newsmakers, shares breaking news, spotlights top community activities and leaders. He'll keep you ahead of the news and informed as you make your way home today. So join Jeff Davis right here, right now, and every day at 5. So stay tuned and you'll have something to talk about over dinner tonight with Hawaii's Tomorrow today. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow today.
Aloha! Yes, it's me, Braden DeVos. My friends and I are taught cooperation in school. Can you grown-ups please cooperate? We need to work together for our environment. Mahalo. Take it, solar guy!
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal on this Tuesday, April 22nd, more notably known as Earth Day. Now, I truly believe that every day should be Earth Day. However, it is important to take time to acknowledge the specialness of our ocean planet and reflect on the type of footprint that each of us leave behind. Each day, Earth Day, has been a long-standing event, which began in 1970, initiated by a U.S. senator following a massive oil spill in 1969. Since 1990, the event has been an internationally recognized day in over 141 countries. Today in Hawaii, we thought we would celebrate by acknowledging those who play important roles in helping to preserve the Earth using science and conservation. Not only is it important to hear from our field experts, but also from those who are the future of conservation. And on that note, we have two guest hosts with us today. Justin and Lily, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having
us. Thank you. It's good to be here.
So Justin and Lily are the COSI Journalist at Sea interns, and you are going to help me co-host the show today.
Yes.
So Lily, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about the Journalist at Sea program and what it is?
Well, I had the opportunity to go on a research vessel, the Kila Moana, for a 9-day deep sea research cruise. I blogged while aboard, and I also helped with the filming for Voice of the Sea. I've got the opportunity also to do some community outreach for COSI and some other affiliated marine science for UH.
So you've had a lot of experiences with this Journalist at Sea program, and it's the goal of it is to encompass a lot of marine science education and communication so that we can get our students interested in marine science and communication.
Yes.
Now, you guys have done a lot. Justin, how did you go about becoming a Journalist at Sea intern?
So basically, in my sophomore year, I'm a junior now, so in my sophomore year, Emily Gonzalez, one of the grad assistants for COSI, just made an announcement that there was going to be an internship, and with that, I just jumped on it, and I didn't really know what to expect, but I wouldn't give the experience up for a second.
And you guys have done a lot of different experiences so far. Lily, you mentioned the cruise. What was so special about that? What exactly were you doing on the ship?
Like I said, I was helping assist for the Voice of the Sea. It is hosted by Kenisa Seraphine. And me and another, she was a marine science graduate student, but she had communications background. We helped film, and it was great. We got to be a part of the science as well, help sort through all the zooplankton and nekton they found, and it was great. I learned so much about marine science and also about, you know, media technologies with video editing, and it was a great experience.
I've seen some of the footage. It looks like you guys had a fantastic time.
Yes.
And while Lily was out at sea, Justin, you were forming your own experiences, weren't you?
Yeah, I got to go to the Ocean Science Conference that was held in Honolulu this year. And with that, I just got to hear about some of the most advancing research in the marine science field from some of the best experts in it as well. And that was a full day of ocean science. I learned a lot.
It was a little overwhelming.
Yeah,
huh? A lot of people.
It definitely was.
And you also had an opportunity to meet another marine science journalist.
Yeah, so I got to talk to a journalist from National Geographic, and she just gave me some insights on her career and what kind of stuff she does and how she got into it. And sounds like a lot of fun.
And not only from the communication side, you've been really lucky, Justin, in that you've been working with some of our state scientists as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so recently, not too long ago, I got to tour the Inuinui Fisheries Research Center at Sand Island. And what that is they're doing some research on some sea urchins that are combating the invasive algae population in Kaneohe Bay. So I got to tour that facility. I got to see it, the process from beginning to end. So it's like basically from before they can be seen, before the creatures can be seen with the naked eye, to their fully grown state. So that was really interesting. It was a look behind the scenes.
Well, you guys are having just a blast working on these different programs. And so what's next for you? I know, Lily, you're graduating this year. Has this experience sparked an interest in marine science communications or marine science?
Yes, I had a love for marine science before, planning on majoring it in college, but I decided the communications route. And I've been learning that there's a huge gap between the science community and the general public's, and scientific public relations people are there to fill it, and I would not mind taking that career path.
What about you, Jonna? What are your aspirations?
So actually, I'd like to become an environmental lawyer, and this internship has actually driven me towards that direction, seeing all of the issues that affect our planet today. And I'd like to be able to make a difference in the world. So this internship has just opened my eyes.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's exciting. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
And so what will you take from this internship? I mean, is there any particular skills that you plan on using for your next couple years at school?
Yeah, definitely writing. Getting the writing experience is a good thing to have under your belt. And I think I can take that. That's always something good to have. And I think you can take it farther and, you know, improve. Always looking to improve, so... That's what my takeaway was.
Definitely the writing skills. Interviewing such educated scientists and using, you know, they usually use such big words for, you know, chemistry, biology, and, you know, and just trying to kind of, I guess, dumb it down a little bit for the general public that aren't PhDs in marine science and stuff. It's very, it was tedious, but I think I enjoyed it and accomplished the task.
And so for the two of you guys, I mean, you're wrapping up the semester and Journalist at Sea will be done for the two of you, but we'll be continuing that program on. What advice would you impart for future marine science communications interns?
Get ready to have fun. Definitely a unique internship and with so many opportunities for learning.
Yeah, I would just definitely say take advantage of the opportunities you get within the program, and... Yeah, you wouldn't regret it. You learn a lot. You have a lot of fun.
And you guys have been working on some blogs that sort of showcase some of your adventures. Where can we go to find those?
It's at thecoseaexperience.wordpress.com. So, yeah, check it out. So it's thecosee, C-O-S-E-E, experience at .wordpress.com.
Well, I am glad that you were able to come on the show today and we could chat a little bit with you about your experiences. But I'm also very excited to turn the microphone over to the two of you to do some guest hosting today and interviewing some of our guests. Earth Day is a great day to do this and to honor everything that's going on. Our regular host, Jeff Davis, is actually honoring Earth Day. He's over on the Garden Isle right now in Kauai. And he's been doing some reef restoration in our nearshore environment, and he actually made the front page of the Garden Isle today, so definitely check that out. We will take a quick traffic break, but when we come back, Justin is going to be interviewing Dr. Eric Franklin. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors today, Leakmaster Roofing, Kamayama Solar, Grand Solar, BenQ Solar, and the University of Hawaii Research Corporation.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Nothing unusual about the drive to the windward side. Everything looks normal on the Poly, the Likei-Likei, and the H3. If you're going east, we do have a brief slowdown now on the Kahala Viaduct. Going west, slower than usual today. That's because of an earlier stall out by the Waipahu exit, and we had an accident too in Iaea that didn't help any. Inbound traffic from the west is slow on both freeways approaching Middle, and then it's slow to Ward Avenue.
If you're unhappy with the high prices or the way you've been treated by mainland corporations, get rid of them. Let Hank's Tax Service help you. Hank and his employees have been preparing taxes in Hawaii for close to 20 years. The sharpest preparers from Hank's two decades of unparalleled tax service have rejoined him to serve you, not make money for a mainland corporation. If you're paying over $200, you're paying way too much. Get rid of that mainland corporation and come to Hank's. Hank's Tax Service, 853-1170. 853-1170.
Aloha, this is your solar guy, Jeff Davis here. If you have any questions regarding HECO's new regulations for photovoltaics or solar electric in your neighborhood, as you know, they have new rules, just call me at 554-7200. I'll answer your questions most likely right over the phone, 554-7200. And please don't forget, solar hot water, solar-powered pool pumps, solar heating, all that is good to go. I can handle any of those questions as well. Call your solar guy at 554-7200. Aloha.
Hi, I'm Frank Rogers from Leakmaster Roofing in the Cool Roof Store. We sell and install protective roof coatings for all types of roofs. What kind of roof do you have? For flat roofs, we recommend silicone roof coatings because they withstand unlimited ponding water and they come with a 50-year material warranty. We feature trusted names like Geico, NXT Cool Zone, and Apoc Silicone with some of the lowest prices in town. If you have a Monier roof or a metal roof, we recommend that you recoat them with NXT Cool Zone to make them shine like new. Asphalt shingles can be protected and waterproof for the lifetime of your home with the Cool Roof Store's ceramic coating. Whether you want Leakmaster Roofing to install the coating or want to do it yourself, come on down to our store in Kaka'ako or visit us at leakmaster.com. Why re-roof when you can simply recoat?
Aloha. Hawaii's Tomorrow and Jeff Davis are looking for motivated people. Are you a writer? The Solar Guy could use some comedy. Would you like to intern? You know he's got room, so give Jeff a call. Jeff Davis at 554-7200. 554-7200.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
Aloha nohoi kako, and ho mai kai nohoi praise to Jeff Davis.
You're terrible at this.
I'm terrible.
I love you, Ruby. Aloha. Hi, it's Jeff. Aloha. It seems as though Hawaiian Electric has made their decision to slow down photovoltaic solar electric installation throughout this last tax season. Many people have turned to battery storage systems to save money on the upgrades and to beat the tax season. These battery storage systems are standalone. You're not connected to the grid. You do receive this year's tax credits for them. And you can install them in any area on the island at any time. It's a fantastic idea. Now, I'm Kamiyama Solar, and we've installed many of these systems in the past. If you have any questions for me, they can be answered generically with a phone call. So go ahead and get to me, Jeff Davis, your solar guy, regarding battery storage systems for your photovoltaics this year at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. Aloha!
Aloha! It's me, Brayden DeVos. And again, I ask a favor. Will you help restock the fish on our reefs so when my friends and I go snorkeling, we can see Hawaii as it should be? Mahalo. Thank you, Solar Guy.
Aloha. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. And with me now is Justin, the journalist at sea intern who is going to be co-hosting with me today. So Justin, take it away.
So I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Eric Franklin. And Dr. Eric Franklin directs the Franklin Lab at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, focusing on research on fishery science, coral reef ecology, and ecological restoration. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Justin.
Can you tell me about some of the projects your lab has done in regards to ecological restoration?
actually, I can start off with one that that relates to the story you told about your field trip to the Nui Nui Fishing Fish Research Center. I'm actually collaborating with Dara on that project, and part of the question is evaluating the effectiveness of the method where you remove the algae and then outplant the urchins. And so I've assisted them in doing some statistical modeling to see actually the effectiveness of that approach and if it's something that can be continued. And so it's basically a big part of kind of publishing and taking that to the scientific community, but it's demonstrating that it's an effective restoration technique.
Yeah, I've definitely learned that collaboration within the scientific community is key. So that brings me next to my next question, actually. You use a lot of geospatial technology in your work. Can you just tell me about what geospatial technology is and in what types of ways do you apply it?
Yeah, certainly. When we talk about geospatial technology, you're really talking about two things. One is GIS, and that stands for Geographic Information Systems, and the other is GPS, which is the Global Positioning Satellite Network. And GIS is really a set of kind of three different software programs. One is a cartography program that gives you a mapping visualization, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners are most familiar with something like Google Earth as an example of that. There's also a database component, so you've got information that can be linked to the location on the Earth. And then there's also what I'll call sort of a geoprocessing functionality, and that's if you want to learn more about, say, both the proximity of one point to another or how they relate to other things in space, you can actually use some algorithms or geoprocessing geoprocessing scripts to achieve that. And so a lot of what we use that sort of software for is to learn more about locations of say, reefs, be able to evaluate where their populations are. And how we do that is, often I think when we talk about geospatial technologies, the data are aerial photos, there's satellite imagery, sensors from satellites. So we get a picture of the entire island and the reefs around it. So we can make sort of a better understanding of the distribution of those resources, where they're located. And so a recent project that we accomplished last year is actually mapping the most dominant coral species around the main Hawaiian island. So you can take a picture from space or from a plane, and you can see where the reef outlines are, but you can't yet tell, okay, where are specific coral species? And so you have to couple these approaches with divers going into the water and saying, okay, at this location, we've seen these corals. And then we do some statistical modeling methods to then be able to extrapolate out to the entire island chain.
So using that data, in your opinion, what is the current state of the coral reefs in Hawaii? Do you think they're improving or do you think they're worsening?
Yeah, it's a good question. So recently, a couple colleagues, Paul Jokiel and Kuale Rogers, have just completed their, I believe it's about a 14-year data set where they've revisited locations that they had surveyed 14 years prior to evaluate how the reefs have changed over time. And their conclusions, I think, at this point are kind of the strongest indicator of how the reefs are doing. And they're really fairly stable, especially relative to a lot of reefs around the rest of the world that seem to be in decline. And if you look at particular locations within the Hawaiian Islands, you'll have turnover and changes in the composition of what you'll find on the reefs. But as a whole, if you look at the state, the reefs have been fairly stable.
That's good to hear. You also run a graduate student training program in marine fisheries and stock assessments. And what type of things do you teach your students?
Yeah, that program is really focused on giving students the quantitative skill set to be able to evaluate fishery sustainability. And so the components of that are, say, a little bit of statistical and mathematical training, some biological training, some fishery science training. So they'll be dealing with historic databases that are collected through the fisheries. They'll be dealing with information that's independent of the fisheries that they may collect themselves. But the end goal is that they've basically got a set of skills that then they can take to, say, get a job as a fishery scientist in academia or government or even private industry.
So ultimately, and with these fisheries projects, what are the implications of this research for, the general population?
Well, in terms of the training projects or which projects?
Just like some of the research you do in regards to the fisheries projects that you do.
Oh, fisheries projects. Yeah. So probably the most recent work that we've been engaged in is somewhat of a follow-on to the project I described about identifying where coral reef species are around the Hawaiian Islands, and that's identifying strong fish habitat relationships, especially things like coral reef fishes, really have a strong what's called site fidelity or association with a particular type of habitat. And with those strong relationships, we can better understand, say, how many fish are in the sea, use that to better inform sort of conservation sustainability of those resources.
Yeah. And then can you tell me about some of the other successful collaborations you've had with state, local, and national agencies?
Yeah, certainly. We've got a good one right now with the U.S. Geological Survey. That's a federal agency that's collaborating with us on a future coral community dynamics study. So this is a set of simulation models that we put together to evaluate potential future scenarios for coral reefs in Hawaii. And the USGS scientists we're working with, the main PI there is a friend of mine, Kurt Storlazzi, is doing the hydrodynamic modeling component. So that informs us, you know, what sort of wave-driven storm events will we experience potentially, how will those affect the coral reef communities in Hawaii.
With all the work that you do in Hawaii, what are some of the where exactly are some of the healthiest reefs you've seen, and why are they healthier in that particular location?
It's a good question. I often, you know, I've been asked that before, and I would first probably say healthy is a fairly subjective term. And if you ask, you know, 10 scientists, they'll probably give you different answers depending upon what their interests are biologically. In my opinion, I would say, you know, healthy is sort of having a full complement of that ecosystem structure. And by structure in that, I mean the different organisms, different animals, different plants, different fish, different corals that are associated with a reef. When you see that full complement of species, that tends to be a fairly healthy reef. And, you know, good examples that are here in Hawaii are definitely the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, where you can get in the water and see charismatic megafauna, you know, whether it's the monk seals or sharks. And really, that's an experience you're not going to get almost anywhere else in the tropical ocean in the world. But even closer to home here, if you're diving in, say, Kaneohe Bay, if coral is your thing, there's extremely high live coral cover within K Bay. So even around the main Hawaiian Islands, there are a lot of reefs that I would say are healthy and enjoyable to get in the water and observe.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about the northwestern Hawaiian Islands in my experience as a COSEA intern, and I would definitely like the opportunity to go, because I've heard, like you said, it's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing, and, you know, there's no place like it. But that's all I have today. So thank you so much, Dr. Franklin, for taking the time to be with us on the show. We will take a quick traffic break, and when we return, my guest co-host, Lily Williams, will be talking to Patty Miller from the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary.
Thanks, Justin. I'd just like to take a couple seconds to acknowledge some of our sponsors, Dior Horton Schuler Homes, University of Hawaii Federal Credit Union, R&R Solar Supply, and Hank's Tax Service.
760 KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Nothing unusual about the drive to the windward side. Everything looks normal on the Poly, the Likei, and the H3. If you're going east, we do have a brief slowdown now on the Kahala Viaduct. Going west, slower than usual today. That's because of an earlier stall out by the Waipahu exit, and we had an accident too in Iaea that didn't help any. Inbound traffic from the west is slow on both freeways approaching Middle, and then it's slow to Ward Avenue.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
Aloha. This is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. Do you want free 5 panels? How about a free trip to Vegas? I know, free financing. Then don't call me. For 25 years, Kamiyama Solar believes in treating our clients with respect. We do not subcontract. We do not offer anything for free, besides aloha. What we do offer is hands-on installation with 25 years of experience and a 10-year workmanship warranty. Call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200. Aloha at 554-7200.
280,000 acres. That's the size of Molokai, Lanai, and Kaho'olawe put together. It's also the amount of the prime farmable ag land designated in Hawaii. 280,000 acres. That's a lot of prime farmable ag land, and it needs to be preserved for agriculture. Aloha, I'm Dean Okimoto of Nalo Farms, and this fact is brought to you by Ho'opili, a new community where commercial farms, neighborhood, and home gardens will be part of the community's design. And there's so much more. Log on to www.ho'opilioahu.com.
Aloha, it's your solar guy, Jeff Davis. You know, I'm offering you folks a chance to get an education.
this time about on-bill financing. You've heard about the new bill the governor signed, paying for your photovoltaic system on your electricity bill. As you may know, the governor just signed this revolutionary bill, and it is directed and aimed at folks that have no ability to find the upfront money for their photovoltaic purchase. If you have questions, you can always call me or attend my seminar. Get a hold of me at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. And aloha.
So you're doing the right thing. You're getting a solar voltaic system for your home or business. But did you know the crucial decision is which microinverter to choose? A microinverter is what's going to convert the sunshine from your solar panels into electricity you can use.
But not all microinverters are created equal.
The Enexis microinverter system dramatically boosts energy harvest with higher wattage microinverters. We're talking up to 40% over its competitors. Year after year, you'll be getting more bang for your buck.
Because not all microinverters are created equal.
So make sure your contractor offers the Enexis microinverter with the system you can monitor yourself. Your system will shine today and be ready for a brilliant tomorrow. For more information, visit enexis.com. That's enexis.com. E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com. That's E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com.
My name is Braden DeVos, and I believe in education. I say get one. Take it, Solar Guy.
Welcome back. I am Lily Williams, guest co-host with Carly Wiener, the Marine Science Gal, on this Earth Day edition of All Things Marine. Now with me is Patty Miller, the education specialist for the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. Thank you for being here today, Patty.
Thank you, Lily. I'm looking forward to this.
So the sanctuary is under NOAA Marine Sanctuary Office. Your mission is education, outreach, research, and resource protection. So how do you achieve all this?
Well, I don't do this alone. I have a team that we work together, and education is an easy one. That's my focus. We work with teachers. We work with kids in classrooms, also bring kids into some of our sites where we have teams that work with them. We work with ocean users, who are folks that are out doing whale watches out on the ocean, and try to bring them up to date on what's going on with the research efforts and how they can get involved in helping protect the whales. And we have a program, a public program, that's called OAT, Ocean Awareness Training, that we started on Maui probably about 10 years ago. And this has become a very popular training. It has moved to Oahu and Kauai, where we bring in guest scientists to talk to folks, and it's about a 12 to 15 hour class over several nights that the public takes part in. And we have everyone from folks that work out as naturalists on the boats to just Joe Public that's interested in the ocean and learning something. We run these 2 to 3 times a year on all islands, and it's on the Oahu and Maui. And it's become a very popular course that we do, and a great way to educate folks. Outreach is easy. We go to a lot of events public events where we host outreach tables, where we are there to talk to folks, do children's activities, and just share what we do with general public. The research is a fun one. We have a boat over on Maui that we support a lot of other researchers that are working on different projects. They do things from studying the sounds the whales make to collecting breast samples, collecting DNA samples. An important one right now that our team is working on is looking at impacts from ship strikes and entanglement, and how these things can affect the health of the whales. And then the resource protection is a very special program of ours that I think a lot of you have probably seen. The news highlights this quite often, is our disentanglement program, where unfortunately the whales are arriving down here entangled in fishing nets, big rope, pieces of rope, and buoys. And our team goes out and disentangles them, cuts them loose, and hopefully sends them on their way happily. So a lot of things that we have going on, but it is a team effort and have different groups of folks. We are located on Maui, Kauai, and Oahu, and have groups that are ready to go out on the resource protection on all of those islands, and educators on all of them.
That's great. That is amazing.
I actually got the opportunity to watch the detanglement video from the Welcome Back Wales event, and it was very moving. It was very well put together. And I have another question. What is the process for counting the humpback whale? Humpback whales that migrate to Hawaii annually, and how is that data collected?
This is another what I call a really good education and outreach project, along with collecting some data, is that at the last Saturday of January, February, and March, we send volunteers out to different sites all over the islands, and they are every 15 minutes from it's like 7:30 in the morning till noon, every 15-minute intervals are collecting information about what they see the whales doing, how many whales they do see, what behaviors they see. Is it a mom and a calf? Is it an escort whale? And are recording that data. And it varies from month to month and from year to year. A lot of it is dependent upon the weather and what we see. But over the years, they've been able to get quite a bit of different information about where kind of the whales are at that time of year and an idea of how many are there. Several years ago, we also did a project called Splash that we had science teams that were out taking pictures of the tails of the whales and collecting the information in a different way of identifying them by their flukes. So
that's great. And how is the whale population doing? Has it increased over the years, decreased? And are you witnessing any changes over time?
Yeah, the population has increased greatly since about 20 years ago when the sanctuary was established. They estimated there were about 2,000 whales at that time that they were able to identify. And now we are estimating about 12 to 15,000 that show up every year down here. So the population has really increased. Protecting them has definitely helped them. At this time, though, there is a petition out to delist them. They are listed right now as endangered and threatened, and there's a petition out to delist them. We don't think that's going to go anywhere, but some ways you look at that as a positive because the numbers are way up, but we'd hate to see that also go into that status, but it is out there at this time.
Okay. And one of the neat things about your program is that you use the public to help with your data collection. Can you tell us about other outreach or community opportunities that you offer?
We have a great volunteer program that, especially on Maui and Kauai right now, we use a lot of volunteers to help with our education and our outreach programs. On Maui, we actually have a visitor center, and the volunteers work in the visitor center. They also work with school groups. We have volunteers that go out and collect water quality data. And that's mostly happening on Maui. Here on Oahu, we are building up our volunteer program that besides doing the whale count, we're beginning to use them a lot at outreach events. And it broadens what our staff can do. We're limited in numbers. So by training the volunteers and educating them and let them turn around and educate other folks what we can do, it really helps. And people seem to love to be involved in these efforts and working with the kids.
I'm sure it's easy for people to volunteer and get the extra benefit of whale watching and seeing those great creatures.
Yep.
Now, the whales are here from late December to early May. What does the sanctuary do the rest of the time?
Well, I wish I could say that we followed them back up to Alaska or we just took the time off, but the education group just keeps educating. It doesn't matter if the whales are here or not. We work a lot with the public, with teachers and with kids, and especially during the summer months, that's easier to do with the educators. Our disentanglement coordinator, Ed Lyman, actually goes up to Alaska too. He follows the whales up there.
Oh.
So he goes up, works with them during the season that they're up there, and trains folks to in the disentanglement efforts and disentangles the whales. He also travels to places in California to help train teams also. And then we have our team that's working on policy issues, and that just goes all year long. So just because the whales leave, unfortunately, we don't get to.
Are you in collaboration with people in Alaska, with organizations in Alaska when they go back up there?
Yeah, he works closely with different groups up in Alaska that are working on researchers. The Coast Guard works with him on helping to do the whale rescues. And so, and the Fish and Wildlife folks.
The sanctuary also works closely with advisory committees and with community leaders. What are some unique opportunities you have working with communities?
We have an advisory council of about 25 folks on that. From they come from different facets of the community, from government agencies to just local businesses, et cetera, that advise us on things that we're doing and what they would like to see the sanctuary going. We also work a lot with community groups and partners. It's one of the strengths of the sanctuary program to build what we do by working with as many partners as we can. It helps us get our messages out. It helps us do different things, and we couldn't do a lot of what we do without working with the partners. And we're also starting to work a lot closer with in the communities of local communities on some water quality issues and looking at some of the things that they see as concerns with the ocean environment.
Well, thank you so much. This has been so informative, and thank you for being here, Patty.
Okay, thank you. Enjoyed this.
And thank you to Lily and Justin. You guys have been great co-hosts and not too shabby for your first time on the radio. And Patty, it's amazing to hear all the things that you guys are doing over at the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale Sanctuary, which is NOAA. But there are many other NOAA offices that also do some amazing work. And we also have with us today John Mitchell, who is the Education and Outreach Specialist for NOAA Pacific Services Center. So welcome to the show, John.
Thanks. It's really good to be here.
And John, this is a new position for you. So tell us a little bit about what you do.
Wow. Education and outreach or engagement is the bulk of what I do. We have a curriculum called Sea, Earth, Atmosphere that we've been piloting for the last couple of years. I'm helping with that. We're doing a redesign of that to try and get it matched up with standards to help teachers out. I am also assisting with the Bay Watershed Education Training Grant. So I'm helping out with site visits, visiting all the grant recipients, and then hopefully getting them ready for the next year of grants that are coming up. One of the big things I'm working on right now is we are holding a NOAA Education Showcase at the new facility. It's a very exciting time because for the first time ever, we have all of the NOAA line offices in one building. So we're inviting 100 teachers out to the facility on Ford Island to check out everything that NOAA has to offer education-wise for our teachers here in Hawaii.
And I'm glad Patty's here, too, because both of you guys have been instrumental in trying to make this move at these new facilities at Ford Island open to the public and sharing a lot of the missions and important research that you guys are doing at NOAA. So that is exciting. How's that commute going for you guys?
I think it's great. I live on the right part of the island.
There you go. And it's a beautiful building. That's a change. That's a change for you, John, as you've been working a lot in the field. How are you liking the new digs?
I love the new building. It is it's amazing to get to see, and everything that they're doing, the environmental friendliness of the building is pretty spectacular. The history of it itself, the building was kind of fusing two old World War II airplane hangars together, and it's pretty cool. It is a huge change from being out in the field all the time. But I'm getting used to it, and I'm just getting to that age where being out in the field isn't as much fun as it used to be. So
well, it's all about balance.
Yeah.
And keeping up with that busy schedule of yours, you've done a lot of other things, important education pieces, as part of not only your job, but as sitting on the COSI Executive Committee. And I know you recently traveled to Guam. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to. Yeah, it was an amazing trip. Went over there with another one of the members of the Executive Committee for COSI, Franny Cooper-Smith, who's a professor over at University of Hawaii Maui College. To run a 3-day workshop on communicating ocean sciences. Got to work with we were working with Sea Grant, Laura Philemon Biggs, who runs the Sea Grant division over at University of Guam. She got it set up for us, so we were working with professors, researchers, resource managers, formal and informal educators, kind of trying to come up with a new approach to communicating ocean sciences, and actually all science for them. There's always such a kind of a big disconnect between the scientific community and how the public perceives it. And so we're trying to help them learn new ways of doing that.
And engaging people in marine science and communicating that is so important. I mean, especially on this Earth Day when we reflect on that.
Definitely.
I want to hear more about this, but let's take a quick traffic break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the Communicating Ocean Sciences course you did in Guam and a little bit about how everyone's going to celebrate their Earth Day. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, Island Cooling and Whole House Fan, and Kanale Ukulele.
KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Nothing unusual about the drive to the windward side. Everything looks normal on the Poly, the Leake, and the H3. If you're going east, we do have a brief slowdown now on the Kahala Viaduct. Going west, slower than usual today. That's because of an earlier stall out by the Waipahu exit, and we had an accident too in Iaea that didn't help any. Inbound traffic from the west is slow on both freeways approaching Middle, and then it's slow to Ward Avenue.
Aloha! If you would like to work with Jeff and Kamiana Solar in a sales position, Jeff is hiring qualified people for full or part-time positions. Please call Jeff at 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
If you're unhappy with the high prices or the way you've been treated by mainland corporations, get rid of them. Let Hank's Tax Service help you. Hank and his employees have been preparing taxes in Hawaii for close to 20 years. The sharpest preparers from Hank's 2 decades of unparalleled tax service have rejoined him to serve you, not make money for a mainland corporation. If you're paying over $200, you're paying way too much. Get rid of that mainland corporation and come to Hank's. Hank's Tax Service, 853-1170. 853-1170.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Hi, I'm Skylar, and I'm a Wish Kid and the CEO of High Sky. I don't believe in Santa Claus, but I believe in Jeff Davis. Take it away, solar guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, and I'm sitting here with John Mitchell, the Education Outreach Specialist for NOAA Pacific Services Center. So, John, you were telling us a little bit about Communicating Ocean Sciences and doing this in Guam as part of a workshop. What kind of activities were you able to provide?
Well, we actually provided quite a few. I'll just kind of highlight some of the top ones that I had the most fun doing because it's all about me at this point. really fun was we had an interactive discussion about climate change, and with this we were trying to aid the participants in the workshop to understand the learning cycle about how there's an invitation to come and learn, letting everybody an exploration phase where everybody's kind of checking it out, giving the participants time to kind of conceptualize what they've just gone through, and then letting them apply what they've learned in a new situation and then reflect on it again. And it kind of taught them how it's a very cyclical process. So that was a lot of fun. Climate change is always an interesting discussion no matter who you get in with. So it was pretty fascinating on that side. We also did what they call an ice cube freshwater saltwater investigation. This one we had four different stations that everybody had to participate in. One was what we called an open-ended exploration where everybody we gave them the tools and just let them sit there and figure out how to run the experiment. Then we had one was a very structured activity. And then we had a problem-solving challenge application, which was more of a scientific method way of going about things. And then we had your stereotypical read and answer, which is we just gave them the textbook version of what was going to happen and then ask them questions later. My favorite of all the activities we did was what we did with phases of the moon. It was modeling what we call a constructivist approach to teaching. This realizes that all of us have a preconceived notions or prior knowledge about things. So with this activity, we ask all the participants to get together in teams and discuss how they thought the phases of the moon went about. And remind you that these are all scientists, resource managers, and so forth. And then we bring them into a room and actually model an activity where they see how they themselves are planet Earth. They're holding the moon, and then we have a big light in the center that serves as a sun. And we walk them through all the phases of the moon. And what we came to find out is every one of us in the room had the theory wrong. We were all under the impression that the Earth places shadows on the moon, and that's how we see all the phases. It was interesting. And then we come to find out that wasn't how it was. So it kind of rebuilt and then let everybody kind of understand by watching a model how we have preconceived notions of what's going on. So it really helped build everything up.
So I just have to take a side note here for our listeners that are wondering, how do we see the phases of the moon then?
Oh, you're killing me. it's how the sun reflects off the moon in different points of its orbit.
Oh, I see. So it's not the Earth's shadow. It's
right.
How we're placed
we're seeing the moon as it's the sun's reflecting off of it.
And so these sound like amazing activities, but what kind of feedback did you get from the folks that participated?
We got a lot of great feedback, actually. It kind of opened up the researchers and scientists' eyes as to how the general public, I guess, it's a bad way of putting it, but how we see everything and how sometimes the big words and everything can kind of throw us off or give us misinterpretations of what's going on. It was great for the formal and informal educators. They really liked the learning activities and learning or seeing how to model and how modeling and getting in front of the audience really helped out a lot. We had one of the professors who was the astronomy professor at University of Guam. He actually came in just for that activity to see what all of his cohorts, what their theories on phases of the moon were, and he had a big kick out of it and
I bet.
Pulled me aside for a while.
Well, that's great. And, you know, we do this activity in Hawaii a lot, and it deals with a lot of important issues like climate change, sea level rise. What are some of the differences or similarities that you saw between the participants in Hawaii and Guam?
There was similarities. You know, I think everybody's fascinated because we realize how we have our knowledge in each of us individually has been built up and how we need to pass it along. So I saw a lot of similarities on that level. Guam and Hawaii have culturally actually a lot in common. So it was really fascinating for me to see that. Guam has a lot of issues right in their face as far as invasive species go. I got a sense that they were more hard pressed and more excited about jumping into this stuff and trying to get like just hit the ground running. Whereas sometimes in Hawaii, I think I get the feeling that we sit back and go like, oh, we've got a couple more years before this is really an issue. And they're in Guam, we're kind of hit right in the face with a lot of issues.
So what I hear you saying is that it's more of a proactive instead of a reactive type of situation.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, and on that note, being Earth Day, this being an Earth Day episode or show, I think it's important to play off some of the expertise we have in the room with us today. Both Patty and John working for NOAA, which has access to a lot of different types of marine science, and you guys do an amazing job in sharing and communicating that information. And Dr. Franklin, who works at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, which is leading amazing research in the marine sciences. How do you feel that we celebrate Earth Day? How do you celebrate Earth Day, and how is that important for what you do in your day-to-day lives?
I'll take it. You know, I don't look at it as Earth Day. It's, I think, especially on this island, it is Earth Month. And I was just counting up how many different events in the last 2 weeks we have participated in. It's up to, by the Saturday, it will be 8 different Earth Day events that have happened all month long. It's been real interesting attending these because they've happened in different communities with different audiences. I was at one of the military bases the other day and found it really interesting. There were a lot of new folks that have just moved to the island that attended this event and were very curious about the environment and what was going on. Saturday I was at one where folks had been out doing a bunch of cleanups and they were very knowledgeable about things and had a whole different level of conversation and things going on. So to me, it's a whole month of things. And we, as the Humpback Whale Sanctuary, we kind of combine Earth Day because everybody else does it in April. We move it forward a couple of months, and we continue on with Earth Day. And I'd like to invite you all to attend an event that we are hosting on June 7th, which is the day before World Oceans Day. So we combined Earth Day and World Oceans Day together in a celebration out at Turtle Bay, which is, again, an outreach event and a chance to get involved in some ocean activities. So to me, it's not just one day.
Well, congratulations, Patty. That was an excellent segue to the event. And you're right. It's not, Earth Day shouldn't just be one day. Eric, I'm curious, how do you incorporate conservation into marine science and the research that you do?
Well, I was going to say that I'll kick it up a notch from Patty, and that Earth Day is really every day of my career, as my wife reminds me. And really, I think it's the focus in my lab on try to use sound science to inform sustainable resource management, and whether that's fisheries or coral reef management. That's really a sort of a framework that has been an important part of my science for a long time. And I guess, you know, being a coral reef ecologist by training, I think that environment, we've got a lot of bad news coming out about reefs, that there's a potential decline. But what I want to say is that there is hope. Every little bit that you can contribute will make a change. And I guess any broad movement starts with a single person having an idea. So whether it's you know, something local, something regional or global, I mean, it's a single person's idea that kicks that off. And so whether that's science or outreach, and, you know, a lot of the events that these fine colleagues of mine here have sponsored, I'll participate in, bring my family to, and really enjoy.
That's amazing, and it's great to have the science community involved in the education. And John, you also have an event coming up around the corner that celebrates science and marine outreach and education.
I do, and thank you for that, because I was going to have to say ditto to what he just said about Earth Day is every day. Our big event is going to be June 2nd, and it's a educator's workshop, getting all of the NOAA line offices, all the curriculum and activities and the resources that we have out to the education world, so they can use them and get more scientists out there for us.
And there are lots of events. Want to plug, there is a great Earth Day celebration at Hanauma Bay this Saturday. There is a teacher workshop coming up at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology on climate change. There are so many events and opportunities and ways for people to get involved. What is the single piece of advice you have for our communities here in Hawaii, and something small that they can do to make a difference towards our oceans or to the environment? Anybody?
I think it's to learn about it. You need to learn about it, you need to understand it, and you need to experience it. You need to get out there, see what the ocean is about. If you're not a snorkeler or someone that likes to get in the water, go to the aquarium. Learn, see those animals, and see why it's special and why do we need to protect it. And then find a way to get involved. Pick up a piece of plastic off the beach, anything that makes you be a participant in helping keep our oceans clean.
I think that's a great point, Patty. There are so many opportunities for people to get involved and things that people can learn about. And on that note, I would like to thank Patty Miller, Eric Franklin, and John Mitchell for being on the show today. I'd like to thank our guests who have taken the time to celebrate Earth Day and to share all their important knowledge with us. I would also like to acknowledge my Journalist at Sea interns who helped co-host on this special day, Lily and Justin. Thank you so much for helping co-host. For more information or to listen to our podcast, be sure to check out our website, www.cosi-ie.net. I'd like to give a special thanks to Jeff Davis, who's working hard on the coral reefs over in Kauai, to Kosi Island Earth, and to the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. Kosi stands for Centers for Ocean Science, Education Excellence, and is an NSF-funded program. Now, I'm Carly Weiner. Thanks for listening. Get out there and enjoy our ocean planet on this Earth Day.